You're listening to the We Lead Well podcast, where well-being matters. This episode is brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchat.com and the Teach Well Alliance. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the We Lead Well podcast. I'm Vicky Maguire. I'm an education and leadership coach. I work with school leaders to support them to improve their own well-being and that of all their staff. I also do one-to-one group coaching and I run group coaching programs for women leaders. And I've also created more recently the Women Lead Well coaching network to provide a supportive network for female school leaders. So today on the show, I've got an interview with the absolutely amazing and inspirational Hannah Cotton. Hannah is a business advisor and she's the founding director of Equalize, which is spelt E-Q-U-A-L-L-I-E-S, as in equal and allies, because she is absolutely committed to allyship, which she will explain all about in the interview. So Hannah was frustrated by the pace of change for women, despite male allies, and she was also conscious of the scale of Me Too and the male suicide epidemic. So she founded Equalize to tie her passion for education equality and mental health to the impact of individual authenticity on productivity. Now that is a bit of a mouthful. However, Hannah will explain what that means eloquently in the interview. So listen on for an explanation of that. She is also keen to future-proof the workforce in the face of automation. And she offers a unique and inspirational view of how to unleash the potential of an inclusive society. Hannah and I discussed a whole range of issues in this interview. I always say I could talk to someone all day. Actually, I could probably have talked to Hannah all week. She is so interesting and has so much to say. So we talked about equality and effective leadership. There are quite a few bits of the interview where my mind was a bit blown. I've had quite a few light bulb moments in this interview. So I'm sure you're going to love her just as much as I do. So here she is, Hannah Cotton. Enjoy the interview. Hannah Cotton, welcome to the We Lead Well podcast. It's really nice to have you on. We've already had a really long conversation before we started recording. So we've missed all the best bits, but let's hope not. Just to start off, can you introduce yourself to the listener? Just give us a bit of a flavour of you, your background, what you do, who you are.
Of course. So my name's Hannah Cotton. I founded a company called Equalize, which is all about putting the future productivity of society, really, onto the radar of everybody, but all through allyship. So Equalize is my baby. But really, from that, I draw on education a lot. It might be because my parents were both teachers. It might be because I recognise me and my family have had quite a lot of social mobility through education. I've been very lucky to have some great educational experiences. And really, I've taken that into businesses, but I've always come back to education. Businesses are successful when they learn. And within business, I wanted to be a school governor. That taught me so much, but really it kind of opened my eyes to how integral education is to communities, how integral it is to our whole society working together, and really how much we have to learn from well-led schools. Because happy children are good learners, but that means if we can teach happy children to be good learners and effective workers, then maybe the businesses that are currently not having happy employees could learn more from how good schools deliver this. We've already mentioned, though, not all schools are doing this very well.
No.
So it's interesting to think about the experiences that I've had with good school leaders. I think they've always been very receptive to working collaboratively. As you know, as a school governor, I'm really conscious that there is this role of critiquing and, you know, being that constructive friend, really. You know, let's look at what's happening, let's see where we can have some opportunities to learn and grow. And you know, when I've worked with schools which aren't so receptive to kind of collaboration, that's where I've come across most difficult journeys, both for the adults in the school and for the children, unfortunately.
So in terms of your career, where have you worked and what do you do now?
So it's really quite eclectic. I started in law and finance. That was my academic background. And from that, I learned that I didn't really want to be a tax accountant or a criminal lawyer or anything like that. What really fascinated me were the systems that society had put into place to enable people to work together. So I took that into a master's, but then focusing on communication systems because the mobile phone had just become really prominent and I could see how it was impacting relationships. So law, finance, then technology and human interaction were my kind of babies. And I took it into policing. I was an intelligence analyst. Fascinating okay. job. It was literally a baptism of fire. I joined in 2005. Less than 3 months in, we had the first London bombings.
Yeah.
It was a fascinating experience in terms of, again, the partnership working that we did. It was all about problem solving approach. So we had quite a bit of freedom within our special crime unit to understand the causes of crime. So rather than just put more police officers on the street, we were trying to look at where the value was being added. And actually, if we could understand where the crime drivers were and address them first, that would be far better than having more police officers. So I've always been brought up with that kind of like analytical approach that understood the problem rather than waiting to deal with crime and punishment, really. But then I took that to our partner, which was Transport for London, and did lots then in operations management. So business intelligence into business operations, contracts and operations management. And it was at that, basically after about 10 years in TFL, I started to get quite a lot of recognition for my leadership following an award that I'd received.
I was just going to say, tell us about the award that you got.
It was really interesting. It was after a horrific life event. I was recognised by peers as having used that experience to help other women. So it was a Me Too style moment. And I was, as part of this award, I received leadership training, which I'd never had before. And what was really interesting is that, you know, from a public sector background, I think, you know, teachers, healthcare, policing, we are undernourished. The ability to like really invest in people's potential can be limited. So all of a sudden I'm mixing with the big banks, the big real estate groups, huge organizations with a lot of money, and building this peer-to-peer support with these award winners, and realizing that the experiences that I'm learning about in governance and in transport and in policing are really not that dissimilar to what is being experienced in finance, in the big swanky law firms. All of the issues seem to be resonating around individuals being different, working together for shared goals. And it was the first time that I truly recognized that as somebody who's quite driven, I was always pushing myself to be the best, not the best at being me, I was just needed to be the best at everything. And actually, you know, these high value courses kind of said, well, no, you can't, literally, you can't be the best at everything. Actually, you've got some really strong strengths. If you were to focus on those few strengths and then pull in support and work with others when you're finding you're struggling a bit more, then maybe you'll progress faster with your strengths, and your colleagues will progress faster with their strengths, and as a team that will help propel you forwards. So I took that back to my office. These are my strengths, these are your strengths, can we use this better within our team environment? Our team performance went crazy in terms of really, really good. Obviously, each of us also, I think we were feeling happier. We were feeling more comfortable coming to work, excelling in areas that we were confident in. And it showed in our results. It was frighteningly simple.
This is a really interesting thing for me, because I've done quite a lot of work on, you know, personality tests, character strengths through the Women Leader Group coaching program that I do. One of the things we do at the start is that personality tests, doing some of the like leadership style questionnaires and things as well. So you gain a really good understanding of your skills, your strengths, your skill set, I suppose. I'm ENFP. I don't know if you know Myers-Briggs. Or the campaigner, or the clownfish, I came out in another one, which means I'm very creative. I've got lots of really good ideas. I can get people, I can sell things to people. I can get people on board with things. When it comes to doing the nitty gritty and the detail and the organisation, the making sure all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, I'm not particularly good at that. But in my role as a deputy head, it was a given that you're expected to do that, because I think leadership in schools works in a very, this is the job description, so these are your responsibilities. So you can be responsible for pupil progress, teaching and learning, careers, blah, blah, blah. But what you're saying is a different approach to that, isn't it? Like, these are the things that we're all collectively responsible for. What strengths have we got as a team, and how can we go about using our strengths to make sure we deliver in the best way possible? That is like, that's just blown my mind, really, in terms of the way that you could flip that sort of working as a team on its head.
It is really fascinating, because I didn't get any pushback at work at trying to implement this, but I was conscious that if it didn't start to show results, then it might have to tail off, you know, and it wouldn't be something that would be sustained. But actually, the results for the team increased so much that it went straight up to the MD. And, you know, then it was kind of like, what can the wider organization take from this? And ultimately it was things like recognizing neurodiversity more. We started real conversations about, well, this person is great for leading meetings and, you know, doing the creative stuff. And actually, by encouraging a whole team to go on creative courses, or, you know, encouraging everybody to be creative, it really misses the opportunity that some people really love to do that detail stuff. So let them do the detail stuff, let you do the creative stuff. And I'm trying to think, for a school setting, I can understand straight away that people go, we don't have time, we don't have the resources to make these changes. And all I would say, with kind of like a governor's hat on and a resource management type hat on, is that it doesn't need to be, you don't want to confine yourself with this mindset by your job title. And really, if it's something that, and I'm, you know, you're delivering through your group coaching program, once you know about these values and strengths, you can go into a school and whatever level, whether it's the school kitchen staff, or whether it is the SLT, that when everybody knows their strengths and they know the vision of the school. And hopefully they've got really strong values that are all aligned together, then you will automatically start pulling in the same direction, because it would, you know, as long as those values need to be collaborative, they need to make, you need to make sure that if I'm working on my strengths and I know that you complement where I'm weak, that we are pulling together. But it's very, very possible with minimal input, some basic monitoring about how people are feeling about it. Because I think if you were to say, we are going to work collaboratively and we're going to have Vicky doing the creative stuff and we're going to have Jeff, for example, doing the detailed stuff, but Jeff doesn't feel as though he can manage with whatever that workload is, you'd have to have that feedback loop to make it happen. But I would definitely say, with the skills that you're teaching people, and we call it authentic leadership, it's knowing who you are, knowing your values, knowing others are different, and different is good, we'll be able to have some efficient pulling together.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I think the listeners already know this, but I did, I'm an accredited Resilient Leaders Elements consultant, and mm-hmm. I love their leadership framework. And what one of the things is about, you know, leading with authenticity, having leadership presence, and authenticity is one of the facets of that, but also awareness is one of the elements, and then awareness of others, awareness of yourself and awareness of others within that is really important. So that sort of fits in with what you're saying. But you've mentioned productivity and you've mentioned authentic leadership. And one of the things that you've said, I was really interested in this thing that you said, and you said productivity is maximized when authenticity is embraced inclusively. And I wondered if you could explain what you mean by that. I wonder if we've already just talked about it in all the things that we've just been saying. But I think the idea of like maximizing productivity through allowing people to be authentically who they are and not trying to be someone else, because when I try to be that really organized person, I think I'm going through a process now of accepting that I have to do my best in that, and I'm not just giving up on it, but as soon as I can afford it, I'm going to have an assistant. I'm going to get a virtual assistant just to help me organize everything. But being able to be authentic and work with your strengths, it probably is so freeing. But you draw in as well that idea of sort of inclusivity as well, don't you? So
I think when it comes to that, it's recognized. So with Equalize, I started off my own, did some incredible contracts, and you know, wouldn't change those experiences for the world. But there comes a point where you can talk about allyship and equality and diversity from your lived experiences. And what I learned is that actually what my vision is with Equalize, a non-hierarchical recognition that we are all different. Different is good. We all face different barriers to accessing opportunities, but we all have different strengths, and this is good. I started to work with Richard O'Neill, who's from the Gypsy Roma Traveller community. I hope he won't mind me saying it, but he's slightly older than me. So there's an intergenerational kind of allyship that we've been able to work on. And also the work of fabulous Dr. Lorene Chikwera. She's she's an African migrant. She's an academic at MMU, specializing in psychology and gender, race and culture. Now, everything that I can say about equality, diversity and inclusion is, you know, it's fabulous. Well done, Hannah, going out there and saying what you can about allyship. But for us to stand shoulder to shoulder to talk about gender, race and culture together is, you know, is a lot more powerful and relevant and authentic. It would be really, really remiss for me to feel as though I can lead people, all people, at the same time, when actually some people are going to relate to Richard more, some people are going to relate to Loreen more. And it's really important that all voices are heard. And, you know, we were talking before about, you know, some of the challenges that schools are facing in terms of behaviour management, and what do we do when, you know, adults are bullied within certain settings, children are bullied. It's, you know, it's anti-bullying week this week, isn't it? And actually, when we start to lead with this authentic leadership, when we know ourselves, we know others, and we are receptive to learning, like huge mantra is always be learning, that we can really try and understand where feelings are exacerbating people not reaching their full potential. So that's kind of what I mean about leading in being inclusive and releasing that potential through inclusion, because we all have different barriers. Now, if I've been equipped to communicate effectively and say, I'm really, really good at this, but here's something I'm struggling with, please, can you help me? And I've got the social skills to identify who might have the capacity and the experience to fulfill that need, then that's great for me. But if I can also recognize that not everybody has got the same communication skills as me or the same networking abilities as me, then maybe that's something that I can bring to a team to say, these are where people can work better together if we have some communication skills, if we have some more networking skills. And I think that is what we're potentially lacking, not just within education, but this ability to understand how much feelings are impacting our behaviours.
It's really interesting because Brené Brown talks about vulnerability, doesn't she? And I think what she's referring to is that ability to be able to say, you know, maybe this is how I'm feeling, or I'm not good at that, and accept that as a leader, you know, you're not infallible. And I think problems arise sometimes with leaders who feel like they have to be perfect and that they have to know everything and that people are looking to them and that they can't accept their own, or they never discuss or talk about their own areas that they're, I don't like to use the word lacking in, but those areas that they're not as strong in. And I think that sometimes causes issues for leaders. Would you agree?
I definitely would agree, but it's really interesting. As you were talking, I'm thinking about two people. And again, I hope that the one that I know directly won't be offended by this. But I'm thinking about Andy Marsh. He was chief constable of Avon and Somerset last summer during the BLM riots. And the Colston statue was moved in Bristol that one week. And it caused a terrible uproar. And I could see that he couldn't do right for doing wrong. The police should have done more versus the police didn't do more. And arguably they prevented a national huge bloodshed, because I think that, you know, if you can't remember what the footage was like, it was incredibly tense. There wasn't enough police officers to effectively manage the amount of public and arguably justified upset. So police officers would have been hurt. And I think that would have created a very, very, very unhealthy situation across the country. And what Andy Marsh did was used social media, used you know, the technology that we have today to talk through to the audience, anybody who wanted to listen to him, that in that top police officer role, this is what happened. These were my decision points. This is how I address them. This is how I support my staff. And this is what we've learned from it. And it was unemotive. You know, he wasn't angry. He wasn't defending himself. He was simply stating the facts. And that level of leadership, I think, is a really strong example of authentic leadership. And yeah, I would definitely encourage any of your viewers to go and find those clips. And after it, if I can send you them, I will add them in there. But the other person I'm thinking of, again, I mentioned it before we start, is Hitler. Because sadly, when we don't have authentic leadership, we have a space where leaders are given freedom to define what it is that brings people with them. Now, arguably, Hitler was an authentic leader, and he was probably very effectively values-based. They're values that I don't share with him, but he did incredibly well at, you know, he was highly efficient in achieving some devastating results. And what we need to make sure is that the right people with the right values are being put in those spaces to describe how to lead. And again, whether it's somebody on the school council, whether it is the head teacher, a governor, or somebody, you know, writing a letter into the local newspaper, we all have this ability to say and do almost what Andy Marsh did. You know, these are the circumstances of where we are. These are the options that we have available to us. These are the reasons that we're pursuing this course of action. And this is what we've learned from doing it. And that honesty, that integrity, and that transparency, for me as a leader, is really effective, whether it's in schools or whether it's in businesses. But you have to have the right values underpinning it, because we don't want the leaders to eke in who aren't going to be values-based for positive reasons.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I don't think in my role as a leader, I ever really had any opportunities to explore my values and my purpose. Okay. I ended up in leadership, I think, because I have a natural propensity for leadership. I think, like I was saying, ENFP, the campaigner, I think we're good at bringing people along with us and getting the best out of people. But I think I was an intuitive leader for a very long time. I did what came naturally to me, and it worked. But at any specific point, if you'd said, what is it exactly that you're doing as a leader that's so effective? Mm. I probably wouldn't have been able to put my finger on it and say, well, I do this and I do this and I do that. I've done various leadership courses, and like the resilient leaders elements, it is, for me, that really pins down what leadership is. But there's very little out there, especially in schools. We've got the national professional qualifications for leaders in schools. Mm. But to allow leaders to explore their values, their purpose, as being the fundamental building blocks on which your leadership style and presence is all based, I feel like that's something that's missing.
It's weird, because arguably, I think one of the things that that hit me rather late on in my career, when I was tasked to consider the people that I see as the most positive leaders in my social circles and professional circles, and what is it about them that I can identify in common. So then it's almost like having that awareness of what other people have done, not to replicate them, but to learn from them. Why do I follow these people? Why are they leading me? And arguably, I don't think any of those people would also be able to write down and say, Hannah Cotton follows me because I am X, Y, and Z. And that as much as we would like to define what this leadership is, I think that it changes all the time. And really, the only core part of being a leader is leading yourself. So, you know, I'm conscious this is like you have such a strength in well-being and health, mental health. And one of the things that I would say for all of the leaders that I know is that they are true to themselves and honest when things are difficult. And that's something that makes me go, oh, well, I can associate with that. So maybe that's the thing that makes me follow them. But then when it comes to leaders who don't share the challenges that they're facing, and they don't need to be personal, they can completely be the professional ones, you know, it can be entirely professional. It almost, then there must be something I think within me that says, they can't not have any challenges. They can't not be experiencing any barriers. So there potentially is an element of mistrust or distrust in that leadership style. And I think it's really interesting, again, with the conversations in leadership that I have with out of educational circles, is the recognition that for the last, let's say roughly 6 years, there is a huge amount of distrust in society, whether it's been strategically put into place, but people trust as easily as they did before, whether it's the BBC, whether it's you know, whether it's doctors, whether it's teachers. Like, and again, one of the really frightening trends that I've seen across multiple industries is the level of aggression in schools, in healthcare, in retail. I think retailers are having to spend more and more money on informing people to be civil. Now, it reminds me of the playground. Like, if we have to tell people who are shopping in the Trafford Centre, please be civil to people, what on earth has happened within our society, within the structures that we've got, that has made it necessary for adults to be told to be civil and respectful?
But this is not a political podcast in the slightest, but when you say maybe over the last 6 or 7 years and you think, who was the most prominent leader in the world during that 6 year period? Well, actually, it was a person who wasn't civil, who was rude, who was a bigot, who was a racist, who led from those values. And that's what being on the world stage does. And look at us in our country as well. A man who goes into a hospital where everybody else is expected to wear a mask, and he walks into the hospital, but he doesn't have to wear one because he's the prime minister, so he can do whatever he likes and behave in a totally disrespectful way. That's what people are seeing. That's what people are being led by.
It's role model behavior, whether we like it or not. It's role model behavior, and it's the trust void. That's kind of like where I'm implying about the strong leadership stepping up and saying, this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm faced with, these are the options. And whether it's to families or whether it's to pupils or whether it's to the wider community, I really applaud those heads which are grappling with these incredibly conflicting situations at the moment. I think it's a really uncomfortable time for many, many people who are leading with authenticity, with inclusive values. And all I can say is that honesty and that transparency, I hope, is going to be really integral to bringing society back together again. I don't, that's what I would like to see.
Before we hear more from Hannah about authentic leadership, I'd like to tell you a little bit about our partner, Head Teacher Chat. Head Teacher Chat discusses lots of topics, from how to support pupils with learning, how to support parents, and the many issues that come with leading a school. The aim of Head Teacher Chat is to support head teachers and school leaders who are in a challenging and often lonely role. They do this by offering lots of information for schools to tap into. For example, they have lots of fantastic education companies on their database for leaders to discover, as well as leadership templates to download. They've written product reviews for leaders who are looking for products for their school. And this year, they've even launched the very first school leader planner, especially designed to help leaders to be productive and organised. If you'd like to hear more about Head Teacher Chat, you can find them on their website at www.headteacherchat.com. Head Teacher Chat. It's what head teachers are talking about. Now let's get back to the interview.
And I think it sort of leads nicely into the equality thing, because one of the things that drives me is trying to support more women into leadership roles in schools. I wish we had more female head teachers. And my experience of working with women middle leaders and senior leaders in school is that often they don't want to push to the very highest levels of leadership, or they don't want to be a head teacher. And potentially one of the reasons for that is that it's been seen as quite a male domain. It's not quite that the gender imbalance is not quite as bad in primary schools, but I was reading a blog on the Women Ed website the other day. And actually, when you look at some of the key issues in terms of equality between male and female leaders, there are some, you know, really significant issues there. And I think that is the case, that leadership is often seen as a male domain. Look at the number of CEOs. I think there was something that said there are more CEOs in the FTSE 100 called John than there are women, or something ridiculous like that. But I think it's about role modeling, isn't it? And as leaders, you know, we have to role model that, and we have to provide opportunities for women to be in those roles. But when they don't see people like themselves, for example, I don't want to work 70 hours a week. I don't want to work 60 hours a week or 50 hours a week, to be honest, because I want to enjoy my life, and I can't sustain a work-life split that's like that. So I think I was put off headship because that's what I've seen. I've seen a lot of men who've got the time to work 60 hours a week to do that job, and that has had an impact on me because I've looked to people in those roles. And I think this is a key thing, isn't it, in terms of equality, because what you see becomes what you experience, becomes the reality, and it's a really difficult status quo to change.
I might not give you the answer that you might expect from this, but I would definitely say that the numbers for me are a measure of how society may be adapting to a drive for more equality, diversity, and inclusion. However, I would be loath to use that as a measure in isolation, simply because I know that some women are very successful leaders whilst emulating very masculine behaviours. Maggie Thatcher. You know, if we look at feminism as you know, in its entirety, we can have women in high positions simply replicating the patriarchy. And that doesn't really achieve what I think we need it to achieve. Yeah. And in the same, almost in the same breath, I know some incredibly strong male leaders, again, across all industries, who literally embody and breathe advocacy and allyship. And as someone who has also been asked to go into leadership positions, which I don't want, I know who I am. I know what my end goal is. And I appreciate people sometimes offering me opportunities, which might take me into more visible positions of leadership. I don't want them. So then I would say, I'd rather that you didn't go and find a woman who's going to replicate the patriarchy. Please go and find a man who is going to be a strong ally and advocate for understanding why it is I'm not ready for that position right now. Does that make sense?
Yes, and it's interesting because it's the idea of, I suppose, you know, just because you're a man, it doesn't mean that you don't have feminine qualities. Or we look at, sort of, I suppose we would say that you can embrace, if you're a man, you can embrace the feminine. And that it's like, likewise, if you're a woman, you can embrace what are quite masculine traits in your leadership. So it doesn't mean, so yes, of course, you can do those things. I mean, I looked at a study, I don't know if it was, I think it might have been by McKinsey, and it looked at all the different elements of leadership and then direct reports scored their leader on all of those different elements. It was a huge study, and women scored more strongly than men in all of the areas. I've mentioned this on the show before. People are sick of me going on about it, to be honest. The only area they didn't score more highly in was, I think it was strategic planning or something like that. That's very right brain focused, mm-hmm. I suppose you might call it. So women do make really good leaders, but I think that comes down to quality, professional development of leaders as well, doesn't it? And like I was saying, it links into what I was saying before about, I didn't really know what leadership was. My core values are love, compassion, and kindness. So that's where I led from. I encountered problems in my leadership when I led with a head who didn't seem to have the same values as me. Then I had a huge struggle in terms of, how do I go about this? Because I'm supposed to be loyal to this person, and I am. That's another one of my values.
Yeah.
But how can I be loyal to this person who doesn't seem to have the same like values in terms of like our core values? So I don't know where I've gone with that. I'm not sure where I started.
On that point, I would definitely say that, again, it's almost part of this authentic leadership. You need to have that self-awareness. So you recognizing that that's a conflict for you, that becomes a barrier for you to overcome. Now, as individuals who I believe we lead ourselves to lead, in order to lead others, you can't lead others before you can lead yourself. So by you going through that process, going, wait a minute, here's a barrier for me achieving my potential, how you then deal with it is, again, going to build your leadership style. Because you could, and sadly, again, you know, we could talk about intersectional inequalities here, you could ignore that, you know, for whatever reasons, whether it's, you don't have freedom to just walk away from this position. You might not have the skills or knowledge of how to address potential employment, legal employment questions. And you might simply have a very unhappy, unproductive career. You'll just sit it out and you'll sit and stagnate for the next 10, 15 years.
Which is what I could have done. I could have done that. I could have thought, I'll just sit here until I retire and get my monthly paycheck.
And what are you doing instead? You're using that experience to lead yourself out of that situation, knowledge share, collaborate, and others may be experiencing the same thing, or may an education. You are leading in the most authentic way possible. So we were talking about you leading yourself out of a conflicting situation, recognizing that there was a barrier, you've overcome it, and you're taking that now to educate other people, and it's fabulously authentic. But the other point I wanted to mention is that it seems like for you and I both, we've been invited into leadership spaces and gone, well, wait a minute, I'm not sure that I want this. And this is where, again, the really big picture for me comes into it in terms of systems and society. In as much as if I'm recognized and you're recognized as somebody who is a natural leader and will help create a society that will help other people flourish, and we say, no, thank you, I don't really want to do that. That's because the system and the society as it is today is not built for us to thrive. So this is where it's almost like you need to do the homework on how to create spaces where women with female leadership qualities want to go into in order to achieve their best self and lead others in the process. So if secondary education, primary education, tertiary education isn't that environment, then what does the system need to do to adapt to make sure that women with female leadership skills thrive? I'm not drawing from educational leadership apart from the governance kind of role, but it is very similar in banking, in real estate, in transport, policing. It's all the same kind of things. If you're only going to be attractive at the very, very upper echelons to those with patriarchal leadership skills, then we're talking till we're blue in the face. The work has to be done first to create these spaces, which is why I'm not too averse to having men building the cultures in order to facilitate a pipeline of diverse leaders through. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and the men have to support the women, that they have to help them to become whatever it is they want to, don't they? I'm really interested in the idea of leading yourself first, because only that way can you be authentic. It's about leadership, I suppose, is about responsibility, isn't it, in some respects, and being responsible for yourself and being able to be authentic and lead from your values. That's a real revelation for me, and I'm really grateful to you for coming on the podcast today and talking about that, because it's just made so many things really, really clear to me. And it's made me think, yes, do you know what? I did do that. I did lead myself. I didn't allow myself to be led by others. And I think a lot of the work that we do in the group coaching is actually about understanding how to lead yourself and not be. I think sometimes some of the women who come to the group coaching program feel very constrained by leaders who are above them. They're quite critical of them, or they're doing this and it's constraining me, or, you know, the power that a leader has over you. And I think I've seen a lot of women on the program be able to flip that and go, actually, no, I lead myself. And I just had a really powerful experience yesterday with a woman who had been frustrated with someone who she was being led by. And then we had one of the sessions and she went and she reached out to this leader and said, right, how can I help you? You know, it seems like there are, you know, maybe you're struggling or whatever. What can I do to help you? Rather than seeing that as a, oh my goodness, I'm having all these things done to me. I'm going to take some control over that. And that really strikes me as being so, so powerful that you have to, and in terms of well-being as well, and like your own mental health, leading yourself first is just so important, isn't it?
I think that's still something that, you know, you think about the pivotal moments in your career, as well as, you know, your family life as well. And I think it were, you know, I had a very public breakdown I got lots and lots and lots of help, and I was able to, through family support, through employer support, build back to a space where I even had that opportunity to go, wow, what have I learned? And there was one point where a colleague who was several bands lower than me, had a good relationship with and I'd an awful amount of respect for, they said to me one day, how can you look after others when you don't look after yourself? I think I wasn't eating. I was so busy, you know, this, I'm so busy. And it's almost like I'm so important. I can't afford to stop for lunch. And she just said to me, how are you able to look after others when you don't look after yourself? And it was one of those moments for me. She can see that I am, you know, starting to not be as caring of myself again. And that's poor leadership. You can't say to your staff, you need to look after your well-being, you need to take your well-being breaks, you need to have your lunch. If you're constantly
never... So interesting, because some days I'll say to my partner, you'll say, what's your free lunch? And I'll say, yeah. And he will say, right, so your boss today didn't allow you to have any lunch then? And I'll be like, yeah, okay, because I am the boss of myself. And if I'm not sitting down and having some lunch, then, you know, that's not good leadership, is it? There's only me. I'm the only employee in my business at the minute. But I think that really sort of shines a light on that idea that, you know, you have to look after yourself. Mm-hmm. And also you said, like, it comes back to being the role model that we talked about before. If you don't have lunch or you work 60 hours a week, then that's what you're saying. This is my expectation of myself. Therefore, this is my expectation of you as my employees, regardless of how much I might try and say, oh yeah, make sure you get a break, make sure you do this. People look to you for that leadership, don't they? And they're looking to you for your boundaries, your expectations.
And again, whether it's at home, whether it's in the workplace, if leaders attempt to do lead as I say, not as I do, we can see the consequences on a daily basis of how effective that is. I think it leads to mass civil unrest. You know, we need to have role models who are embodying and demonstrating the consequences of what happens, both positive and negative. You know, if you look after yourself, you sleep well, you stay hydrated, you take time for lunches, you make time to exercise and think about what the barriers and challenges are that you face, as well as the gratitude, you do all of that well-being stuff, and you will be hopefully a happier person than if you don't, you know.
And what we've just said there embodies it's the name of the podcast. We lead well when we lead well. You know, you can only lead well if you are well. And that idea of leading yourself well and leading yourself first is absolutely key to everything, isn't it?
It really is. It's a penny drop moment, isn't it? And anybody who aims to be a leader and goes, I'm going to be a leader and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and like does this strategy of this is what a leader does, I don't think is going to be as authentic as somebody who simply leads themselves, learns how, like if you learn the barriers that you face and how you've overcome them, that enables you to recognize other people's barriers and help them overcome them. And yeah, it's almost like, how do you break that chain of barriers? How do you build those skills? How do you build those experiences? It's through practice. It's not by reading a book and saying a leader must do X, Y, and Z. These carbon copy strategies, I can't remember if it was what we were discussing before we started We were talking about these school leaders who want to come in and say, this is what we will do here and you will conform. And this school is, there is nothing unique about this pupil. There is nothing unique about this year group. There is nothing unique about this community. We'll just do it this way and expect it to be efficient. I don't think it's the way ahead. I don't think it's efficient. I think you end up wasting a hell of a lot of resources. And particularly for school groups, you know, the really insidious kind of behavioural impacts of where you're saying, well, you're not conforming, therefore you're excluded. You're not conforming, therefore you need to go and sit in this isolation booth. I just don't feel as though it's good for our society. It's not good for our systems. It's not good for our individuals. It just doesn't work.
It's really interesting because I've had numerous interviews for leadership positions because I've had numerous leadership positions and a mainstay of that interview, or like a really popular question, is what's your vision for this role or this school? And then you do a lot of pre-work, you look at the data, and then you go into the school, and it makes leaders feel like they have to go into a school with a preconceived idea of what they are going to do. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to do this. This is my vision. And actually, I think leadership is not like that. It's a similar thing that we were talking about, like a one size fits all, that you can read something in a book. You can read Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective Leaders and go, oh, right, OK, well, if I read that book and I do those things, then I will be an effective leader. But And I'm not saying it's a great book. It's a brilliant book. And, you know, I gained a lot from reading that. And I identified with some things I thought, oh, maybe I could do that or whatever. But you can't just expect to, we're not in a silo, are we? As a leader, you're responding to the context within which you are working. And it was before we started recording when we were saying schools are very special, unique places. And as a leader, you have to understand those. That's the awareness element of the resilient leaders elements, that, you know, you have to be aware of your environment and the very unique environment you're working in and how that affects not only the way you lead, because knowing other people is going to affect your leadership, but understanding how you need to move that organization forward, but gain buy-in. Am I just totally waffling here? Am I making some sense?
The look on my face is because I just keep thinking about what you've said for the leadership, and you've read this book and you've taken these things from it and you've thought, this is really useful. I'm not so sure about that. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a curriculum that allowed children to absorb their knowledge in a similar way? You know, it's kind of recognizing that as adults, we are still always learning, but our current system is not yet honed for an individual to go, I really like this. This is one of my strengths. This is really interesting. I'm going to go and pursue it. Versus, you will conform.
And actually, it's interesting because I've just taken on the role as leadership performance coach for NPQSL. And a lot of the participants in my group, when I've done the first one-to-one session, when I've asked what you want to get out of this, I want to know what an effective leader is. I want to learn more about what leadership is. And there's a feeling that to be a leader, it's not necessarily a tick box exercise, but it encompasses this, 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 and this. And if you do all those things, then you can be an effective leader. And I think we've probably come round in this discussion to like it's a very individual, like leadership, like a school is a very individual thing, and different things make leaders effective for different reasons. And it's a very personal thing. But I don't know where that leaves us in terms of like professional development for leaders.
Well, I think I would say the next natural step is that difference is diversity. And this is where your allyship comes in. If, you know, if schools, whether it's with school leadership teams, whether it's governors, whether it's male heads, go, wait a minute, I don't have much diversity here, then it's kind of recognizing that that lack of diversity means you might be missing some opportunities to untap the potential of your diverse pupil set and your diverse community, because it all communities are. So then how do you go about addressing it? Well, first of all, you have to create an inclusive environment, and then you need to work to attract diverse talent. And, you know, with diversity, I do recognize that there are, you know, extreme inequalities with gender, with race, disability, you know. I would also throw socioeconomic disadvantage in there. And, you know, if you're finding that you are only getting a certain pool of applicants to your school, and again, whether that's governing roles or whether that's teaching staff, have a think why, and then really put your thinking cap on and say, well, if I'm always going to be advertising in the same space and I'm always getting the same results, we're bright people. We know that maybe we need to be advertising elsewhere. Maybe we need to build some different relationships. Maybe we need to understand who isn't sitting at the table and what barriers they may be facing, for knowing that they would be valuable here. And, you know, we would like to work with them. And yeah, I'd love to see a lot more done with governance teams and socioeconomic disadvantage, particularly, you know, with the Northwest and the levelling up promises that are being made and perhaps are going to be really, really difficult to achieve. Let's have some awkward conversations about what it means to be privileged. Let's have some awkward conversations about what it means when we want you sitting at the table, what skills might be lacking, or what relationships might leaders need to develop in order to reach the people that we want, to ensure we're getting a true picture of diversity across its very many intersectional angles.
I could, I say this nearly every podcast, I think, because I can talk to people, but I actually could just carry on this conversation all day. I'm mindful that we've been talking for an hour now. So I'm going to say, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been,
I've absolutely loved it.
It's been absolutely brilliant. I've had so many light bulb moments in this conversation. If people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
So I'm currently working with an organisation called The Growth Company, which is based up in Manchester, and I am doing EDI support for The Growth Company. So either LinkedIn, so you can find me at Hannah Cotton FRSA, or on Twitter at Hannah CAC79. That's Hannah Charlie Alpha Charlie 79. And yes, let's take the conversation from there.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us. I really, really enjoyed that interview with Hannah. I think it's one of my favourite interviews of all time. She speaks so much sense and with so much insight into leadership and what it actually is and what it means and how we can improve and become better leaders. So thank you so much, Hannah, for taking the time to talk to us today. It's been a revelation for me in a lot of different areas. I had quite a few light bulb moments during that conversation. So key things to take from the interview. This was quite hard to decide which things I thought were really important, but one of them was this idea of as a leader really thinking about why people would follow you. What is it about you? What is it about your personality, your character, your leadership style, your values, your ethics and your beliefs? What is it about all those things that will make people follow you? And I think that's a really important question to ask yourself if you're thinking of becoming a school leader, or if you are already a school leader. Why would people follow you? And the other thing that really struck me in that interview
was Hannah talked about the non-hierarchical recognition that we are all different and we all have different strengths. And this becomes more apparent to me. The older I get, the more I learn about myself, the more I have coaching, the more I do group coaching programs. And it's the idea that we do all have different strengths and that we should focus on our strengths and not our weaknesses. Often we are told that we should concentrate on our areas of weakness to improve them, when in actual fact, we should focus on building our strengths and working on our strengths. And this idea of the non-hierarchical recognition of different strengths is that sense that, you know, we can look at what we're all responsible for as leaders in a school then, rather than creating job descriptions with specific areas of responsibility. Because in fact, as leaders, we are collectively responsible for all those things. I didn't work in isolation on teaching and learning when I was a deputy head teacher. I didn't work in isolation on CPD. And likewise, the pastoral leaders on the senior leadership team didn't work in isolation on pastoral issues. We all worked together on those things. And I think if we can take an approach of what are all the things as a leadership team we are responsible for, and then decide on whose strengths suit which elements of being able to deliver results in those areas, I think that could be a really, really powerful way of changing the way that we work in leadership. I think it would be such an interesting thing to do. Yes, you might be taking a risk in doing it, but I think it would definitely be worth having a try at that, because it seems to make so much sense. Like so many of the things that Hannah said did, you know, she talks so much sense, and I'm sure that you're taking away a whole range of ideas today that it's going to make you really think about all sorts of issues, abstract issues to do with leadership mainly for me. That's what I'm taking away. So that's all we've got time for today. I would just like to remind you of the Women Leader Group coaching programs that I run. I have a cohort starting in January on which I would love you to join me. I still have a couple of places left on that. So if you are interested, email me at vicky@womenleadwell.co.uk, and we can have a chat about what joining the group coaching program could bring you. I also have some places that have become available for one-to-one coaching with me. So if you'd like to book a chat with me, visit the website www.transformeducationcoach.com and you can book a chat with me there, or you can email me vicky@womenleadwell.co.uk. And I would love you to join the Women Lead Well Coaching Network, which is an amazing space to meet other women in leadership in schools, attend our group coaching program, our group coaching calls. You can be part of the conference that we've got, you can be part of the community, and you can also take part in the live coaching that we do as part of that network. That is all we've got time for today now. So take care of yourself, take care of your staff, and lead well. This episode of the We Lead Well podcast was brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchats.com, and the Teach Well Alliance.